And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, A Wrestling with an Angel, was written by Peter Berry.
I give you my word, Rabbi. I'm not insane.
Insane?
There's no need to be tactful with me.
I beg your pardon, Ben, but nothing could be further from my mind.
I happen to know my wife came here to see you.
Well, I have no intention of keeping Deborah's visit a secret.
She certainly made no secret of my condition.
Well, she told me that you weren't quite yourself.
She told you much more than that.
Well, there were some details, sleeplessness, depression, a kind of general withdrawal, but neither she nor I think for a moment you're insane.
Still, you suggest I see a psychiatrist.
I do. I recommend it strongly. A good man might be able to relieve you, Ben.
Of what?
Your misery.
How would he relieve me of my misery?
By helping you see yourself more clearly. In no time at all, he might clarify what's disturbing you.
And if I know what's disturbing me...
Do you?
Yes. I've seen myself too clearly, Rabbi Samuels.
I'd known him long and well. Benjamin Korff was a pillar of my congregation, and my bookshelves held 50 volumes published by the House of Korff and Company, sound and excellent volumes of quality and culture. Down the years, I'd laughed and wept and prayed with him, but as he stared at me across my study, his familiar eyes were alien and defiant, and I saw with unhappy certainty that his wife was right. Whatever troubled him was a deep and soul-shattering threat to his very existence. In the recent years, men of my profession have had more than ample contact with spiritual and mental suffering. Benjamin's symptoms recited by Mrs. Korff were by no means new to me. A progressive change of heart toward all he loved most. An aversion to friends and amusements, then an avoidance of her and the children. Finally, an overwhelming distaste for his work in all its aspects. I knew he was in desperate need, but his attitude was a barrier precluding inquiry. What little else I learned was relayed to me by his anxious, bewildered wife. On the following day, she called to say that his condition was worse. The day after, she reported a distressing interview at the bank. Without Korff at the helm, the publishing house was tottering on the edge of collapse, and his long-established credit was seriously jeopardized. On the third day, she came to my study again.
The first time I came here, you said... We can sometimes deal with these things ourselves if we know approximately when they began. Well, I know now. It was about 6 weeks ago on a holiday weekend. For a long time, we'd talked about straightening up the attic, Ben and I. And that day, we decided to take the bull by the horns.
I see.
It seems like such a wonderful afternoon to me now. Ben was in a very good humor, thumbing through some back number magazines. Reading aloud and laughing. I recall that clearly. I was on my knees cleaning out a trunk he'd had before we were married. And then suddenly I saw it.
What?
This.
She placed a photograph on the desk before me. A very old photograph, composed in the dark brown tones of early photography. Dingy now and worn with time. Even so, I could see that it had been made on a small, middle-class lawn on a fairly sunny day. In the foreground were three figures. One of them, Benjamin, very slender and sensitive in his late teens. Beside him stood a somewhat older boy with a robust, grinning face. Between them in a wheelchair sat an aged, white-haired patriarch.
The one on the right, you know.
Yeah, that's Benjamin. And the old man?
His father. I've seen pictures of him before.
Most impressive gentleman.
Yes.
Oh, how long ago this must have been taken. Who's the other lad?
That's the point, Rabbi Samuels. I don't know.
You aren't curious?
I asked.
And?
I took the picture over to where Ben was standing. Who's this Ben, I said. He was smiling until he looked up and saw the picture. And he hasn't smiled once since. That's when it began. And surely, I don't know why, but that's when.
She left the picture with me, and I sat until after sunset trying to fathom what it had meant to my friend Benjamin Cort. Then, with the early starlit dusk massing outside my windows, I picked up the phone and called him.
I'm not interested in any more talk.
Oh, please, Ben.
It's a waste of time.
I want to ask you a question.
I know a thousand questions about myself.
No, one question about a photograph.
When shall I come?
As soon as it's convenient. I left the picture on top of my desk so that it should be the first thing he saw as he entered. Come in. I'm sorry to have called you, Ben, but your wife was here this afternoon.
I see she was here. She brought this?
Yes, she did.
Well, I suppose she had her reasons.
Deborah is a reasonable woman.
There's no doubt of that. You wanted to ask me something, you said.
Yes.
Well?
Who are the people in that photograph, Ben?
Why, that's me. That's my father, rest his soul.
There's a third person.
Some friend of the family's, I suppose.
His name?
His name? This thing was taken 30 years ago.
Oh, even so, I thought you might remember.
A man forgets a name in 30 years.
A man forgets some things in a day and others he remembers always.
This is a thing I forgot.
Who is he, Ben?
What do you want from me?
I want you to make an effort to save yourself.
That can't be done.
I don't believe it.
Believe it, please. Believe it and let me be.
When a psychiatrist says it's true, I will.
Psychiatrist? There's nothing a psychiatrist can do here. I'm not a lunatic.
Pardon me, but you sound more and more like one.
I knew I shouldn't have come here.
It's despicable and cowardly for a man to yield like this to the destruction of his family.
My family is provided for.
And his business.
It's not my business.
What?
It's his.
Whose?
Stop answering me. Stop.
Oh, Ben. Benjamin. Look, Benjamin, I'm your friend. Sincerely, relentlessly. And a trustworthy friend, Benjamin. Whatever tortures you are, I promise it'll die with me and bring shame to nobody. Ben, give me a chance to help.
Nothing can help.
God included?
Most of all, God. He's turned his back on me.
Why?
Because he's God and good and wants no part of me.
And who has pronounced this judgment?
I have.
Have you the right to condemn a man's soul?
It's my soul.
Did you make it, Ben? Please, Ben, for Deborah's sake, for your children's sake, for mine, tell me.
All right. I'll tell you. And when I do, you'll turn your back on me.
We'll see about that.
I know who the boy in the picture is.
I was certain of it.
His name is David. David Korf.
Korf?
He's my brother. In all these years, I haven't mentioned them to you, nor to Deborah, nor the children, nor any of the trusting, unsuspecting people who think the best of me. It hasn't been an oversight. He hasn't slipped my mind. I've deliberately tried to keep him hidden and forgotten. But when Deborah found this picture, I realized that I hadn't forgotten him, and that he'll never be hidden from me. We're about as much alike, we two, as storm and sunshine. He was the older, bigger and stronger than I, with more courage and lust for life than five of me. We were never close. In fact, there was such a gulf between us that I was surprised the night I woke to find him standing over my bed. Surprised and a little frightened. Father was old and very ill, and
I thought, with my heart pounding, he'd come to tell me the worst.
It's nothing like that. Take it easy, Benny.
Papa's all right, then?
I guess. The nurse is in there with him. She let us know.
I see. What is it you want?
I want to talk to you, kid. Keep your voice down and listen to what I say.
Yes, Dad.
I need a little money. It's going to be the last money I ever need from anybody.
What do you mean?
I got to lay my hands on $1,000, Benny, and it's got to be right away.
$1,000?
I know it sounds like a lot of money, but it's chicken feed to what I'm going to make with it. Believe me, chicken feed. Now, the fact is, some friends of mine are letting me in on a deal they can't miss. It'd take too much time to explain it the way they did it to me, but it's big. Take my word for it. It's tremendous.
Yes,
now, here's the angle. I got somebody let me have $1,000, but they're looking for collateral. Now, you know what collateral is, huh?
Yes, I know.
Smart kid. You always look bright as a new dime. Well, this person, a professional in the field, is all for yours truly. And he's willing to take my equity in Coffin Company against a loan.
Your equity?
Yeah.
You haven't got any equity. The business belongs to Papa.
Well, it belongs to Papa now, but sooner or later...
You're talking about what you inherit.
Nobody loves Papa more than me, but deals like this are once in a lifetime. And you know what the doctor said.
I don't want to talk about it.
You gotta talk to me about it. You heard Dave.
They still didn't. You've been a baby all your life, but you're over 21 now, and I'm making you act like it.
Let me go.
No, you're going to hear what I tell you.
What do you come to me for, anyhow?
Because I need you.
Need me?
This professional says no matter what I agree to, you might come along later with some phony claim and give him a lot of headaches. According to him, he can't see his way clear unless you come down with me in the morning and sign a couple of papers.
He wants a release.
Something like that. Now, you'll do it, won't you, like a good kid? Now, I'll see that you're taken care of.
I'll have to think about it, Dave. I'd already thought about it. Thought it through. It wasn't difficult to outthink Dave. He was a simple creature, direct and primitive. It sickens me now to realize how shrewd and cunning I must have been. My mind was made up before I slept. And the next morning, when he came to plead with me again, the trap was ready to be sprung.
You mean you got that kind of money?
I started working afternoons when I was 12, Dave. I've saved a little.
A little? $1,000 ain't such a little. You honestly mean you lend it to me?
No. I'll give it to you, though, Dave.
You don't mean that. You're an okay kid. I'm going to do something nice for you, Benny. Believe me, I am.
Dave, you can do something for me now.
I can? I got nothing but high hopes and the clothes on my back.
You can make out a paper giving me your equity in Coffin Company.
What do you mean?
Those are my terms, Dave.
This on the level?
Yep.
Let me get this straight. You'd really settle for some old presses and a handful of debts?
The professional was willing to settle for them.
Well, it's different with him, kid.
How?
He just sold the presses and let him sue him for the debts. You can't do that. You'll have to pay him.
I've always intended to.
Why?
Well, it'd take a long time to explain it to you, Dave.
Okay. Don't say I didn't warn you.
I won't.
You got yourself a deal.
A deal.
I'm going to hold you to it, Benny.
And I'm going to hold you. Capable, efficient, and cold-blooded, I left no stone unturned. That afternoon, a lawyer drew up an airtight agreement, and I remember the thrill of triumph that went through me as I saw Dave put his signature onto mine. I had what I wanted. Dave could speculate and gamble as he chose. I had the thing of value, a publishing company, in debt, perhaps, and suffering from the neglect of father's illness, but a dignified entity with which a man might work and grow and prosper. I told my secret to no one, not even my father. His age and sickness had dimmed his judgment, I told myself, and at all events, it was better to keep my own counsel. I had no time for regret thereafter, no time at all. Like an automaton, I lost myself in the jungle of details that were swamping my father's business, working, planning, scheming, endlessly, relentlessly. At the end of 6 months, I'd contrived to pay the debts and show a sizable profit. And at the end of 6 months, my father passed away. A little time went by, and the scheme in which Dave had placed such high hopes had collapsed. The friends who had promised him easy money had vanished, and with them, his investment. But he managed a smile and a swagger somehow when he came to see me at the shop in the heat of that roaring noon.
I can arrange for you to stay on, Benny.
How's that?
I said I can arrange for you to stay on here.
Arrange?
With the new owner to be.
I'm selling out, kid.
You are?
Yeah. Oh, about that $1,000 you loaned me, don't worry about it for a minute.
I've never worried about it, Dave.
You've been okay, kid. Most ain't so okay about money they lend.
I haven't been okay, Dave. I didn't lend it. I bought an agreement with you, remember?
But...
And that agreement stands.
You think you're going to take all this away from me for a measly $1,000?
I'll give you my lawyer's name and address. He's sure I can.
Why, you...
You're not pulling your way through this, so forget it, Dave. I can arrange for you to stay on if you'd like.
Thanks a million.
It's a serious offer.
Don't make me laugh.
You haven't even asked what the salary is.
Whatever it is, I'll do better elsewhere.
Are you sure of that, Dave?
Sure or not, I'd starve in the streets before I play second fiddle to a four-eyed bookworm like you. David, see you later.
And I've never seen him since.
I understand.
I've heard about him from time to time, about the life he's had. Empty, pointless, pitiful thing that it is. And I, I've flown high, my friend. I'm Benjamin Korff, publisher of the best, enlightener of the nation, bringer of culture to the masses. It was a star ride, bright and mighty, until Deborah showed me that photograph, and the ride ended abruptly in a dead center of nowhere.
I see.
The illusion shattered like glass, and I suddenly knew the truth. I'm nothing. No one. Everything I have belongs by right to David. Every bit of prosperity and acclaim I've known, he's paid for in frustration and obscurity. Do you understand now why a psychiatrist would be beside the point?
Perhaps.
Do you realize at last who I am, my friend?
No, who are you?
Cain.
Cain?
The biblical Cain, and the mark is on me.
Benjamin.
Yes.
How many Bibles have you published?
Bibles? Thousands, I suppose.
Have you ever read one?
As much as most men.
And yet you imagine your story parallels Cain's?
I struck him down, didn't I? We were brothers, weren't we?
Many men have been brothers, Benjamin.
After all this time, you still don't see. Listen to me.
No. No, my friend. The time has come for you to listen. Let me tell you of two other brothers who lived in that same pastoral Canaan of Cain and Abel. Of a boy who stood one golden afternoon stirring a steaming pot, and of the sound of a hunting horn that came suddenly blasting through the world's tranquility. The boy turned. Behind him in the tent portal, there appeared his brother, stalwart, deep-chested, and clad in the skins of animals. Some say he had come from hunting, and others from murder and quick-gotten gains, but whencever he came, he was hungry. And he wanted what he wanted, when he wanted it.
Give me of thy cooking, brother, quick, make haste.
Nay, saw, father dotes upon this pottage, and he has need of it in the weakness of his age.
Give me, I bid ye. By the stars it reeks of goodness, I crave it, and I swear I'd have it if it cost me all my soul.
A foolish jest.
This is the point of my javelin, a jest.
Thy soul for a mess of pottage.
Esau cares nothing for his soul. His satisfaction is the soul of Esau. The price is nothing. I'll have what I desire.
Even so.
Aye, so.
Wouldst give my birthright for it?
Now you do jest.
I jest not.
Wouldst really give me of this redwood pottage for nothing more than that?
With all my heart.
Why then, 'tis done.
Why, I can scarce believe thee.
Believe me, lad, and serve it forth before I rip it from ye.
Forgive me, Benjamin, for telling a story that had been told 5,000 times 5,000 years ago. But
why did you tell it?
Answer me first. Why did it come to pass, Ben?
What do you mean?
Did the birthright change hands because of Jacob's devious cunning? Or because of Esau's lack of love for it?
I don't know. I've heard it said Esau was faint with hunger.
So the Bible says itself. But it fails to say how hungry Jacob would have had to be before he'd have made such a bargain. So profitless, so without soul. Esau, you see, loved only what he could hold in the palm of his hand. And had not Jacob won it, he'd have sold the birthright late or soon for a bowstring or another draught of ale. Jacob was the hungerer, and he took the birthright unto himself with eagerness and cherished and savored its subtle nourishment, for which Esau, by his nature, could have no appetite. You follow me, Benjamin?
Yes.
And you remember that later, when the time had come for blind old Isaac to give his blessing to the eldest, it was Jacob, again hungering for the lofty and intangible, who covered his hands with the skins of animals and stole into his father's tent.
Esau.
I, my father.
Are you in truth he?
I. Hast thou not felt my hands?
The hands. The hands are the hands of Esau, but the voice is the voice of Jacob.
Bless me, father.
I will bless thee.
And Jacob was blessed. God loved Jacob, because in him grew the flower of the future, deep planted in the rich soil of veneration for the good things of the past. Like yourself, Benjamin, Jacob revered the work of his father and the world he built, and longed to grow and prosper in it with patience and in peace. Like yourself, he knew that his brother's hands would rend the precious heritage and loose it to the winds. For this, God loved him and chose to give unto Jacob his covenant. Aye, he was cunning. Shrewd was Jacob. Adaptable, too, and able to bend as the reed bends to the necessities of that reality by which man sustains himself. And for that, God loved him all the more. Loved him and saw in him the resourceful and devoted man, fit to be eternally the father figure of his people. Does God turn his back then upon such as you, my friend? Oh, no. You're a poor judge, Benjamin. Both of yourself and of heaven.
Is this the truth? Is it really so?
I believe it is.
But I'm not Jacob. Jacob triumphed. He didn't fall ill as I've fallen ill. He had no guilt because he knew none.
He knew no guilt? Have you decided so? Even though you know that years later, when circumstances brought his brother close to him, we're told that Jacob was alone and there wrestled with a man until the break of day. Benjamin. Alone, he wrestled with a man. What has that meant to you?
I've never quite understood it.
Well, haven't you wondered how a man alone would wrestle with anyone save himself?
Yes, I have.
Well, then cease to wonder. That man with whom Jacob wrestled was at once Jacob and an angel. And he knew guilt, and he suffered as you're suffering, as each man must suffer when he wrestles with the angel within, when he's like two embattled armies warring against himself. Do you understand?
Perhaps. Yes. I think I do.
Well, then count the time wherein you have endured this agony a holy time, and the place where you have endured it a holy place. For can an encounter with an angel be reckoned otherwise than a blessing from on high?
My good friend, you've wrestled through the night, and it's time now, Ben, for daybreak. Time to release the angel. Time for the angel to release you. Time for him to say to you, as he said to Jacob, when he renamed him Israel, "Thou hast striven with God and with men and hast prevailed." If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Sol Eisenberg, prominent Detroit business leader and co-chairman of the Detroit Friends of the Seminary. Mr. Eisenberg.
On the face of it, the story you have just heard is a dramatic account of a spiritual crisis in the life of one man. Yet, if we look into it more deeply, Benjamin Korff is also a symbol. And the problem he struggled with is a parable which holds true for a great many people today. By his own admission, Benjamin Korff had once taken unfair advantage of his brother, a brother who, like Esau, had rejected his own birthright. But Benjamin had made matters even worse by not facing up to his mistake and correcting it in time. Instead, he buried it, out of sight and out of mind for over 30 years. And when, many years too late, the memory of his sin was recalled, he was overwhelmed by a burden of guilt, far too great for one man to bear. The trouble with him was that his struggle with his conscience came much too late to do him or his brother any good. And now, as the good rabbi told him, he was committing even a greater wrong by torturing himself uselessly. There are many people who, like Benjamin Korff, go through life crushed and paralyzed by a sense of guilt over something that is beyond recall. They indulge in self-pity, and they assume that even God has turned his back on them forever. The Jewish tradition teaches us to avoid wrongdoing in the first place, but it also tells us that no man has a right to condemn his own soul forever or to consign himself and his family to a perpetual blind alley of useless remorse. No man is perfect, and God does not turn his back on us if we sincerely repent our sins. God gives each human being the challenge and the opportunity to struggle with himself, as Jacob did in the Bible. But this struggle is not an end in itself. Its purpose is to conquer our evil desires and return to life and its moral duties. Both the Bible and modern psychology teach us that whatever guilt we feel about the past can be made bearable only if we atone for it and turn our eyes towards the future. Only in this way can we face life creatively, with hope, determination, and renewed faith in God's moral law.
Thank you, Mr. Eisenberg. Our Eternal Light drama today, A Wrestling with an Angel, was written by Peter Barry. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Roy Shield. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Norman Rose, Carl Weber, Connie Lemke, Joe DeSantis, and Edwin Jerome. This is Mel Brandt speaking. This has been an NBC Radio Network production, directed by Daniel Sutter. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.